Welcome to the Rehumanize podcast. Herb here. I'm joined by Emiliano and our guest, Emily from the Equal Rights Institute. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be on today.
Thanks for coming on. So these are crazy times that we're living in right now. It feels like we have just gotten, 10 years worth of news in the past couple weeks. What has been the reaction at the Equal Rights Institute about the possible overturning of Roe v. Wade?
Well, we are obviously very excited, as I think the whole pro-life movement is, but our work is far from over, and it is in many, many ways accelerated, which I think anyone who works in the movement realizes, but perhaps, the average lay pro-life person doesn't. It seems like maybe this is the finish line. We can all be celebrating because it's happening, and it's true that we can and should be celebrating, but there is so much more work to do, both for the lay pro-life person and for the movement as a whole. And so, for me personally, we've had a huge uptick just in people finding our content over these past few weeks, because we started putting out content constantly. We've always been an organization that puts out a lot of content, but the week that the leak of the Supreme Court happened, we started putting out 8 TikToks a day, responding to what are the most common pro-choice concerns we're seeing right now. And that means that we got a huge following there that just grew exponentially. And I'm getting Instagram direct messages basically daily with requests for different videos, like a pro-life person saying, oh, I'm hearing this argument from my pro-choice friend. Can you make a video on this, or do you already have a video on this? People are reaching out to us just seeking out that content, because I think the average person is talking about abortion way more now than they ever had. Whether you are pro-life, pro-choice, or you're kind of a person that wasn't really sure where you stood, this is a time where everyone is talking about it. And so people are seeking out answers. And that means that at ERI, we've been busier than ever with just trying to churn out content for people and give them those resources that they're looking for.
Yeah, and I think that's good overall, the idea that more people are thinking and talking about abortion right now, because, I'm pro-life, and so I happen to think that we're on the right side here. And I feel like I've always said that the work of pro-life apologetics is so rarely convincing someone of something, and is often just revealing the truth. It's revealing what is abortion, what happens during an abortion procedure, and talking to someone about the values that they already have and how I believe that should apply to the abortion question. And so I think that ERI is sort of the best in the game in terms of pro-life apologetics when it's the actual, talking to someone who is pro-choice or pro-abortion, and getting them to see what is the truth of life in the womb and the violence of abortion.
Well, thank you. I'm honored that you think we're the best. I'm kind of biased. I also think we're the best, but, I kind of work for us. So I do think that ERI has really amazing tools we bring to the table. And I love when we can partner with other pro-life organizations like you guys. We all specialize in different things. And that's what I think makes our movement so strong, is we can all kind of specialize in this one niche and then partner and work together and share resources and support for each other. And I think that we need more of that. And I'm glad for how much of that we have. And especially the relationship between Rehumanize and ERI has been wonderful for so many years. So it's my pleasure to be here, and thanks for supporting ERI.
Yeah, and thank you. So on our last episode, we were talking about just kind of our raw reactions to everything, just kind of the flurry in the first 2 weeks after the announcement. What have been some of the things that people have been asking you about? What are the things that you've seen most commonly that people are like, hey, we need responses?
Sure. So the interesting thing is I get very different kinds of questions from pro-life people and from pro-choice people in this sphere. So I would say the most common things that I'm hearing from pro-life people is people begging me to make videos about how to respond to the question of rape, how to respond to life of the mother, ectopic pregnancies, and the violinist. Wait, LaViolettis is like the outlier of that. Like, these are all like the difficult circumstance type things, which makes total sense to me. A lot of people are really concerned, like, if there's a prospect of Roe actually being overturned, there's a lot of difficult circumstances women are going to be faced with if they can't get an abortion. And so that tracks to me that a lot more pro-choice people are talking about the difficult circumstances and wanting, you know, there's pro-lifers asking me for resources of how to talk to my pro-choice friend about the question of rape, for example. The violinist is something we've been seeing increasing, that kind of bodily autonomy argument. We've been seeing slowly increase for several years in its popularity, but suddenly I think a lot of pro-life people are being dumped into these conversations when maybe they hadn't been before. And so they're hearing arguments that they haven't heard before, even though I've known that argument's been around for years. And so I've been getting, like, just this morning, I had an Instagram DM asking me, do you have any resources on the violinist? And I'm like, absolutely I do. I have at least 10 videos.
Resources on the violinist.
So many. Here, let me spam you.
The violinist lends well to memes, so.
Right. So that's kind of the main things that I've been getting requests from pro-lifers. On the pro-choice side, the number one and number two, I would say, comments that I'm seeing that I keep putting out content on are, they truly do not think that there is support for women who are pregnant and aren't going to be able to get an abortion. I think a lot of pro-life people have in their mind, yeah, we need to expand the support that we currently have, but there is support there. The pro-choice people I'm talking to on the internet truly think there is none. And, like, that they're not being disingenuous. Like, that's their genuine, like, that's been their experience. They don't think it's there. And they think that pro-life people are going to offer thoughts and prayers to these individuals and nothing else. And so both breaking down stereotypes about what pro-life people already do offer, talking about pregnancy resource centers and helping to break down stereotypes about that, and then also opening the conversation up to being really transparent about the things that I'm thinking about and the things that other pro-lifers I know are thinking about for policies that we want to implement or should be supporting. I think that there's a dual thing going on here where the pro-life movement needs to both continue doing the things we've already been doing, providing that one-on-one localized support through things like pregnancy resource centers. And then there's also the legislative side of it, of talking about what laws and policies do we want to put in place. And so helping pro-choice people to see that pro-lifers are and want to continue doing this, and just being really transparent with them to kind of humanize myself and show myself as being someone that does care about both the unborn child and the woman, has been really, really important. Because just, I mean, thousands and thousands of comments pouring in on my things saying, there is no support for women. What are you doing to support women? Like, this is going to hurt women so much. And I want to make sure that they're getting answers and they're seeing what our movement wants to do moving forward. I'd say the second most common one that I see there is just concerns about back alley abortions, concerns about women who are going to try to do something dangerous to their own body in order to pursue an illegal abortion of some sort. And obviously, none of us want that to happen. No one wants any women to be hurt in an abortion, whether it's legal or illegal abortion. No one wants that. And so responding to their concerns about that and the idea of, what will borning abortion actually do? Will it reduce the number of abortions? What will happen? What of resources are available? All of that. So I'm kind of seeing these two different sides depending on who's reaching out to me. And we've been trying to put out content to answer all those questions as fast as we can.
Great. Yeah, no, I've definitely appreciated the ERI TikTok. I think that that is where I see most ERI content, because I'm just on TikTok indefinitely at all times. And so I think that I see just, and I don't intentionally follow really many pro-life or pro-choice or political pages at all. Like, I follow a couple friends on TikTok, but otherwise I'm just at the mercy of the For You page. And so I'm always excited when I see ERI pop up, because I, despite trying to use TikTok as an escape from politics and work, I constantly see pro-abortion TikToks. Like, it's over and over again. And I try not to comment on them, because I know that commenting on them just brings them in my feed even more. But sometimes I can't help myself and I'm like, no, actually, this is misinformation. You're wrong here. The draft opinion doesn't say that. The law doesn't say that. And so I really appreciate when every once in a while an ERI TikTok with you will come up on my screen and you will be saying that for me. And it's like, thank you, Emily, for expressing this. So I definitely appreciate you being on the TikTok grind.
Well, thank you. It has been an exciting part of my journey at ERI. We just launched our TikTok back in January. And I think the amazing thing about TikTok is kind of precisely what you alluded to there, Herb, that you are mostly at the mercy of the For You page. And that means that if somebody watches a pro-abortion TikTok one day, the algorithm's going to throw them my video the next day. And we have crazy amounts of pro-life, pro-choice dialogues happening in our comment sections. And every day what I do in order to create my content is I'll look through the previous day's video and just see, is there a particular pro-choice comment that is A, getting a lot of traction on here, B, is like really thoughtful in some interesting way, or C, is it just a topic I haven't covered in a TikTok in a while? And I will pull that comment and use it as a topic for my next day's video. So not only do I have pro-life and pro-choice people engaging in the comments, then I'm starting to engage with those pro-choice people through creating more content based on their questions. And it's created this really amazing community that really doesn't seem to exist very many other places on TikTok. Like, I see some other pro-life content, not a lot. There's not a lot of pro-life like creators on TikTok. There are a few, but not a ton. And so we have one of the biggest followings as a pro-life content creator, and we're getting a lot of this engagement between pro-life and pro-choice people in a way that the other pro-life accounts I'm seeing don't as much. They get a lot of the confirmation bias land, whereas we tend to get a lot of the dialogue, which I'm really grateful for, because as you said, this is the time when people are opening up and like having these conversations at a rate that's faster than we've ever seen. Like, everyone's talking about it. And so I'm glad that we can be there to try to help facilitate those dialogues and create space for them.
Am I the old person here? I think
you're not on TikTok.
Yeah, I'm not on TikTok.
I'm like, if you're not on TikTok, yes.
Yeah, I think I am the old person here. Are the ERI TikToks like the one that's like, duh, duh, I'm doing the TikTok dance?
Emiliano is dancing for the listeners.
That's the only thing that I know about TikTok.
So that's what I was going to say, because Rehumanize International, we have a TikTok account, and Maria Oswald mostly runs it. I've made a couple, and Maria does a good job, but
she does do a great job. I definitely follow your guys' account and watch your videos. They're great.
Thank you. Yeah. Follow us on TikTok at Rehumanize INTL. Follow Equal Rights Institute too. But something that me and Maria have talked about is that it can be difficult to come up with ideas for TikToks that are sort of in line with the trends on TikTok, sort of using the popular sounds and, you know, the memes that are currently active on the app. It's difficult to try to fit into the culture of TikTok and also make good, winsome pro-life arguments, because I think what the tendency that I think both of us, me and Maria, had at the very beginning when we were watching, you know, other TikToks maybe that were political but not about abortion, or just kind of, you know, non-political TikToks, the tendency would, it would be really easy to take one of those popular sounds or memes or trends and just use it to dunk on pro-choice people. Like, the easiest thing you could do is just call pro-choice people stupid or wrong, or, you know, whatever the individual meme setup punchline is. And it's a lot harder to actually promote productive dialogue. And so that's something that we've struggled with, and we've definitely been inspired by ERI to be better, because I think that you're right. A lot of pro-life accounts, you know, online in general, but especially on TikTok, do fall into that confirmation bias where we're only interacting with pro-life people. And that can be fun. You know, it can be fun to make fun of a silly pro-choice argument that we all know doesn't make any sense. But when a pro-choice person sees that, if they just see us making fun of them and, you know, kind of calling them dumb and not taking their argument seriously, they're not going to want to take our argument seriously. And so I think that that's something that I need to remind myself of a lot of the time. And I appreciate ERI's work to make sure that we're not just falling into that, well, it's easier to dunk on them and it makes us feel good and we might get a lot of engagement if we do that. But the engagement is from pro-life people who already agree. So how important is that work?
Exactly. I totally agree with you that probably 99% of the pro-life content that I'm seeing on there is dunking on pro-choice people and using the trends. And yes, using the trends on TikTok are fun and you can get good engagement there, but I made a very conscious decision early on to not do that. I don't pay any attention to the trends on TikTok. I don't use music on my TikToks. I don't use anything. There's no dancing. There's no like pointing to things in the screen. I know no one can see me, but I'm also dancing right now. And like, that's not a thing.
I have no conception of a TikTok other than what, other than the four corners, like,
four corners pointing. No. So what I do is it kind of made a strategy decision, and it seems to be working. Arguably, we have over 12,000 followers on TikTok in 5 months, which is largely way over practically all the other pro-life accounts that I see, with the exception of a few giant organizations that are way bigger than us. But we deliberately try to make something different that people are intrigued by, because it's not what they're seeing on the rest of the app. And that seems to be what makes ours so appealing. So what I literally do is I like set up my camera facing me, and I sit facing one direction, like angled to the side. And I will like read aloud basically the pro-choice comment that I'm responding to. And I will have that comment posted on the screen so people can see, like, this is a real thing someone said. I'm not making this up. And I will say that pro-choice comment, and then I'll cut the video and I'll flip and face the other direction and respond to it as a pro-life person. And then I'll put steps in text on the screen and like in the open space next to my head of basically the bullet point version of what I'm saying. Like, this is how I'm responding. Sometimes if it's a really step-by-step process, I'll literally put step one, like find common ground. Step two, ask a clarification question. And I'll just show people. So not only am I responding to the comment, which people appreciate, but I also am kind of showing the steps so that a pro-lifer could take my argument and regurgitate it somewhere else. And mm-hmm. just that kind of, like, it still makes use of the fun things people like about TikTok. There's, you know, cuts in my video between facing different directions, so it makes it kind of entertaining to watch. There's still text popping up on the screen, but it's not this kind of dancing in my parents' basement-esque TikTok, which is what you see 99% of the time. It is, like, actual educational content, which is so different from the other, like, I've quite honestly not seen any other pro-life account make my style of videos, and I think that's what makes it work. Like, if I read a million articles about like how to be successful on TikTok before starting our TikTok account, and the biggest thing that they would tell me is to find your niche, find the thing that you do that makes your account unique. And so I spent the first like week just trying out a million different things, and I tried the dancing around thing, I tried the music, I tried the memes, like I just tried a million things, and one day I stumbled. It was kind of exhausting. One day I stumbled on this idea. I tried it, and that video got 10,000 views. And I was like, wait a minute, this might be it. Like, all my other videos gotten like 200 views. And so I started making videos like that every single day. And now our account has just skyrocketed because I've kind of found that niche so that people aren't seeing other places. And it's still TikTok entertaining, but not the kinds of stupid content that most people are going to TikTok for.
That's really cool that there's, well, just in the pro-life movement in general, like we said, it's, there's lots of different groups doing kind of, different things, all around one similar theme. But that's, cool how ERI has been able to kind of find, a niche that has lent itself well, I think, to a very quick reaction, in the light of the Dobbs case. So like what was it like in that first week, in the first 24 hours when the announcement happened? I mean, for us, it was crazy, I know, but, for you guys, how did you guys take the reaction? Like, what was kind of the emergency plan, I guess, that went into place? Yeah. 'Cause I feel like all of us had kind of like a, okay, we know the Supreme Court's composition is now this, and we know that there's mm-hmm. this case up, but a lot of us were just kind of like not ready in that moment because we thought, well, it's right. Nothing's going to be decided until summer.
Exactly. So we were all prepared in one way and not at all prepared on the day that it actually happened. I mean, the news broke at what, like 8 p.m. Eastern time? And we had a It was like in the middle of the night. I got a text in our staff group chat. Josh Brom, my boss, was the first one to find, to like see the news story and immediately texts our staff chat. And we all just dropped everything and went into content making mode because, I mean, that's not in our typical work hours. We all work 9 to 5 basically. But this was important enough that we jumped in. So I started making TikToks immediately. I posted TikToks until about midnight that night. And we just ended up kind of divvying up the social media accounts between our staff so that we could be constantly active on all of them answering questions, because that's really what people see ERI as being there for. It's kind of like our niche within the pro-life movement as a whole is we're the place people go when they have questions about how to talk to pro-choice people, questions about arguments, what to say, when to say it, how to say it, those kinds of things. And so we wanted to be there for all of our followers in that moment when they were having those kinds of questions. So Josh took over our Twitter temporarily and like was just constant responding to people that were, because he, you know, put out a post being like big news, Supreme Court leak, and instantaneously we have insane amounts of comments. I was monitoring our TikTok, making all of these things, putting them out there, and our Instagram. We had another staff member monitoring our Facebook. Like, we were trying to just be there for our followers. And basically that was our whole week. We threw that whole week out the window. We'd had things we were going to work on and they just all went in the back burner. The whole point was just get out as much content as we can, as fast as we can, answering people's questions. And then we also started putting together our true plan for what to do when the full decision came out. Because at that point there was speculation that it would come out the next day potentially, and or very soon thereafter. Obviously as of the day we're recording this, it is not out yet. Who really knows when it will come out. But we, you know, got all sorts of things ready to go. I mean, we have a video ready to go in the YouTube queue. It is there. It is published, unlisted. And like, we can hit post to the world the moment that we actually get any news about what's actually happening. So we've been trying to just make sure that we are there for people, because our supporters want to know what ERA thinks. They want to know what to say and how to say it. And so we try to fill that gap, I guess, in like, they're seeing all the news reporting about it, and that's awesome. And so we're not here to report the news. We're here to help them talk about the news effectively with other people. And so they'll come to us usually once they've heard big news like that, trying to say, what do I do? And we want to be there with those answers.
Great. And so I guess my next question then is, what is the answer? What, give me a sneak peek at what ERI is going to say once Roe v. Wade falls. How do we as pro-lifers move forward, especially, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, conversations online and on TikTok, but also on other social media. What sort of is our role? Because once it comes down, you know, then it's out that, you know, we,
right,
there are things that we can do moving forward in terms of legislative change and in terms of you know, the policies that we're going to have to advocate for and promote and, you know, vote for and campaign for, but in terms of like that next day as pro-lifers who sort of exist in our communities and, you know, mm-hmm, talking to people in our families and in our workplaces and especially online, about abortion, where do we go from there?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Do we just say like, neener, 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 you lost?
Yeah, no, please don't do that. Please don't do that. That is the worst thing that you could do. Do not do the in your face, yay, we won type of a thing. You can tell people that you're excited. Like, I'm not telling you to not be excited, but you need to make it very, very clear in your circles that you know that your work as a pro-life person is just beginning, because we need to step up to the plate and be there for these women and make sure that no one feels like they have to have an abortion. And that was true all along. We always wanted to create an environment where no one felt like they needed to have an abortion, but that's even more important now that they cannot get an abortion in many, many states. I think basically pro-life people need to do 4 things. In my mind, the first one is they need to actually come out as being pro-life if they are not already quote unquote out as being pro-life to the people in their circle. There's going to be a lot of momentum in the pro-life movement the moment this decision comes out. There's so many conversations about it. Like, this is a really good time to do that, where you can easily, you know, have a news story that you're talking about that enables you to broach this conversation. I think that pro-life people need to humanize themselves. We need to not be this just crazy old white people that like I don't know, live far away. Like, it is the average college student. It is, you know, this person that lives next door to you. It is whatever. You want to make sure that people, when they think of a pro-lifer, think of you and not some other that they've never met or seen that they can't imagine. And one of the big benefits of that is that people already have those stereotypes of what a pro-life person is. And if they already know you from a different context and they like you, I don't know, maybe you have a class together in college or whatever it is, you have this existing relationship. They think you're nice. They think you're awesome. They think you're whatever. And then they find out that you're pro-life. And then this crazy, like, mind explosion happens because they have this stereotype of how horrible pro-life people are. And then they have you and they liked you. And now they find out that you're one of those evil, awful things. And now they just, there's like a crazy juxtaposition happening in their head that they have to go reconcile and deal with. And your position automatically becomes more fascinating because they want to know why someone like them could believe this thing. Because they see you as having common ground and common values. You have some sort of relationship there. And they realize that pro-life people aren't as different from them as they thought. And that can create a lot of intrigue as we kind of move into the future steps. So first step there is just to actually be willing, take this time to be public about being pro-life and give people that space to talk to you. My kind of second step is that you need to be able to respond to their questions. That means training yourself in how to have these conversations about abortion. And obviously, Equal Rights Institute is an amazing place you can go for that. We're not the only one. There's lots of pro-life organizations that offer materials helping you know what to say and how to say it. But obviously, I'm biased towards loving Equal Rights Institute. So I would encourage you, be following our social media pages, our TikTok. One of the biggest things that I love to push is our quick response series on our YouTube channel. It's a series of 27 videos responding to the 27 most common pro-choice arguments in under 5 minutes. So it's like our TikTok and then it's short content, but it is much more expanded. You get more of the argument and less of me just making the argument. People who watch the quick response series leave much more confident knowing how to actually respond themselves in a fuller conversation than just a short little soundbite that you're going to get on TikTok. And so that's a great little database to go through. The ERI blog is constantly churning out content as well, much longer form, just to help you know what to say to different kind of arguments. You can just use the search engine on our blog as like a database. You can type in any pro-choice argument and you're going to get articles pop up on responding to that. And so make sure that you are equipped in how to have these conversations well. Look up those arguments. I was talking earlier in this podcast about like one of the most common things that pro-choice people are concerned about. Guess what? You now have a list. Go look those up and start to kind of learn, this is what I would say, or think through it yourself so that when you come out as being pro-life and they come back with a question or come back with telling you why they're pro-choice, you feel equipped to know what to say. You feel like you can start this conversation. You don't have to know the answers to everything. This is not a debate. You're not trying to win. You're just trying to open up conversation and want to be able to articulate your position well and also know how to listen to them and know what kind of questions to ask. That's something we're really passionate about teaching at ERI is what are the clarification questions you should be asking? How do you kind of get their wall down and really understand where they're coming from? And so using those kinds of tips and tools that we teach can help you have this conversation go really well. So you've come out as being pro-life. You're equipped to have these conversations. Then I think the next step, and I mean, next as in these all kind of happen simultaneously. So you know what I mean? But last step would be to start doing things in your life to be supporting women and families and be talking about those things that you're doing to your pro-choice friends. It is not true, like from a philosophical perspective, that you have to be doing those things in order for your position on abortion to be correct, so to speak. Like, you could be the biggest hypocrite on the planet who hates women and hates families and hates children, and I don't know, like, maybe you're actually an abortionist. That doesn't make your pro-life arguments wrong. Like, nothing about your argumentation is affected by how you behave. But obviously, people take you way more seriously if you are actually walking the walk and doing the things you're talking about. And not only should you do it for that pragmatic reason of making yourself more persuasive, you should also do it, period. Like, if you're actually pro-life, then you should be caring about people. That's the whole point. And so it is not only better for your arguments, but it is also just good for you as a person and for society to be out there advocating doing things that are supporting women and families. And that can come in kind of both forms that I talked about earlier, both through kind of the local agency level of supporting pregnancy centers, volunteering, donating, creating the local infrastructure to be helping those families that live right next door to you, and on more of a national or state level of advocating for legislation, you know, taking a really good look at what are the policies that have been proposed to help women and families? What ones am I interested in supporting? And what ones maybe I'm not comfortable with? You don't need to be willing to support all of them necessarily, but I think every pro-life person needs to take an honest look at what are these policies that different people have proposed and what would that mean, and decide which ones you are passionate about and you want to help make happen, and start advocating for those online, in your conversations, making it really clear that the pro-life movement is here to make abortion unnecessary and illegal. Like, we want to create that foundation, that financial support, that material support, that all of the safety net so that women and families can actually do this. And so if you do those kind of things, you humanize yourself by coming out as pro-life, you equip yourself those conversations, and then you start advocating both on that kind of local organizational level and that national level, that's, I think, the real next step forward for the average pro-life person.
I think one thing that has been really, really wild in a beautiful way for me has been, as someone who is like mostly politically active on the left and progressive circles. And like for me, like abortion is kind of like the thing that like throws me out of those circles a lot of the times. From the joint letter signed by a ton of pro-life organizations saying we do not support a fixed abortion that will criminalize women. How you just said, like, we need to be focusing on the safety net. Like, we need to make sure that, you know, we're actually walking the walk. Whereas a lot of, you know, my friends and organizations that I respect more generally, while obviously being very disappointed in their stance on abortion, have really just run the other way with it, in being like, we need to, like, not focusing on the safety net, not focusing on, you know, the reasons that lead to abortion, but being like, if we don't have abortion, then we're going to, like, we need abortion for women's equality, for economic equality, for like the right of women to work, like, just taking it completely the other way and like kind of almost ignoring or dropping that fight for women's equality in the workplace and pregnancy leave and you know, better healthcare access and things like that. And like in this fight for abortion right now, it seems like so many other things like are just completely getting dropped and ignored on the progressive groups that normally focus on that. And it's been really, really heartening for me to see just how much across the spectrum of pro-life groups, how people have been saying like, all right, we're winning, but winning needs to make sure that we also take care of the women and the children and the pregnant people and all the people who are going to be affected by this. So that's been really heartening for me to see.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think this is the time that the pro-life movement needs to step in and pick up that slack. And especially as I agree, we're seeing a lot of more liberal-leaning organizations drop the ball there, not be advocating, at least at this moment, for that kind of safety net, and instead just be advocating for abortion rights. If the pro-life movement can step in and show that we want to pick that up and we want to, you know, take that on as part of our what we're lobbying for, I think that not only is the right thing to do, but it also makes our position much more fascinating to people across the political spectrum who, you know, maybe have been skeptical of the pro-life movement. It makes us much more believable, and it is the right thing to do, that we need to be, if we're taking away abortion access, which we should be, we need to make sure that women have the support that they need to make this actually possible for their lives.
Yeah, I think the point that you made earlier about, you know, we should be doing it in terms of building the social safety net and making sure the needs of women and people who can get pregnant and young families are met. It's good because it bolsters the pro-life argument, you know, it like makes us look better. It's more appealing to people who might be on the fence. But I think more so, it's a good in and of itself. Like,
yes,
I sort of hate the idea that I see pushed a lot that, well, we need to sort of build the social safety net so that we can make abortion illegal. I think I see that a lot on the kind of pro-life left. And it always makes me uncomfortable because, like, yes, the social safety net needs to be better. I would say I think that, you know, pro-lifers do a pretty good job of attempting to meet those needs, but we know that pregnancy centers right now, like, they are a band-aid. They're not necessarily, you know, meeting all of the material needs of a pregnant person, and especially not, you know, throughout the entire life of that child. Like, we are certainly not in a perfectly equitable system yet. But I often see pro-life people lean into that, I think, a little bit too much, and then get to the point where they then say, so let's only do that instead of criminalizing abortion, which to me is a disaster, because it makes me feel like, well, why do you want the social safety net in the first place? Is it because you think that working class and poor people deserve housing, healthcare, you know, the material needs? Or is it this sort of kind of like trade-off that you're making to give enough taxpayer money to certain social programs in order to prevent abortions? I think I always get really uncomfortable around a lot of, you know, you could call them pro-life liberal spaces, but that's not necessarily true, because I think that the pro-life conservatives I know are also calling for these, most of these social programs, especially in terms of the pro-life leaders in the movement. And so I think that I often, when we talk about the social safety net and all of these things, like, I think that there are, you know, a broad base of things that we can do to make life better for pregnant women and parenting people across the spectrum. But I never want to say that we need to do one or the other. It needs to be both all the time.
Yes. So well said. Agreed.
So now, what do these months look like, you know? Or these months, weeks, days, we don't know. Other than, you know, educating ourselves, other than getting involved, how are pro-life people supposed to kind of find community and make sure that we don't kind of get pushed back by what really is kind of like a frenzy at this point, I think, of pro-abortion, just rush of media and talking points that I have seen, kind of pro-life friends that I had in college now kind of backtracking to be like, hey, I'm not the bad guy. Don't be mad at me. And kind of, it's been a little bit sad for me to see a couple of people, at least that I know that were involved in pro-life groups in college. I feel like really responding to just the pressure in their environment, in their work environment, in their social environment. I feel like it's going to get a lot more intense, like rhetorically. So yeah, I guess, like, how do we build community amongst each other so that we know we're not like the only pro-life person and that like our social lives will be ruined if we keep doing pro-life advocacy and are like the one pro-lifer and just don't get invited to parties or anything anymore. Or, you know, possibly like actually like risk, you know, work promotions or things like that.
Right. That's a great question. I feel like there's kind of two simultaneous things there. One being to create or find a pro-life space, those pro-life friends, those people that you can turn to, that you're in this with, you have buddies. But then there's also the side of how do I broach these conversations well with those pro-choice people in my circle so that they're not going to alienate me, so that they see the pro-life position in a way that they didn't before, and they become more interested by it and less threatened by it, if that makes sense. So I feel like the first part there of finding pro-life people, confirmation bias is a huge problem, but it does have benefits. Like there are good things about it in terms of I want there to be spaces where pro-life people can meet and greet and talk to each other and kind of have this like communication safe space, so to speak, where they are able to not have to watch their every word or be concerned about those kinds of things. Like they can be having open conversations with other pro-life people. And so you should be very careful about the kinds of media you're consuming, the people you're hanging out with, that it's not living in confirmation bias, but it is okay to foray into those spaces occasionally, I think. That's something that following pro-life pages can often do for people, engaging in comment sections with other pro-lifers, finding other people in your local community that are pro-life, because I guarantee they're there. You can find them. They do exist. Getting involved with a local pro-life organization is a great place to find them. So if you start looking into your local pregnancy center, for example, I can pretty much guarantee everybody there is going to be pro-life. And so if you start volunteering there, getting to know the other volunteers that do things in your community, your local county right to life group, or your local college pro-life club, or your local, like there's groups of pro-lifers all over the country that you can get involved with for the sake of meeting other pro-life people, developing those friendships, and knowing that you're not alone. That can be really helpful to make sure you don't burn out. You don't, feel like you can never say what you believe and then you start to waver in what you believe, or you just hide it under the closet all the time because you don't feel like you're going to be accepted anywhere for it. So knowing you have those people that you can turn to, I think is really, really important, and finding those people in your life. And then also creating those conversations. So when you do humanize yourself as being pro-life, you do come out as being pro-life, you are doing it in such a way that people are interested, not turned off. If you were coming out as pro-life and I was a pro-choice person in your community, in your workplace maybe, and you came out as being pro-life by posting something that was really, really celebratory about Roe and in your face pro-choice people, obviously I as a pro-choice person am going to have a very different reaction to that and probably try to ostracize you, because it seems like you really are that awful stereotype I had in my head of pro-life people. Whereas a very opposite approach would be coming out kind of in person or in a smaller group type setting to them and saying something like, hey, I just wanted you to know that I am pro-life. I am happy that Roe v. Wade is being overturned, but I know that you in this community are pro-choice, and that probably means you're feeling really, really threatened and upset right now. And so I want you to know that I recognize that, because if there was a, you know, the Supreme Court was about to take away something that I thought was fundamental to my rights, like I'd be really mad too. Like I get it. I understand if you're feeling that way. And I want you to know that like, I'm here to talk. I want to understand what you're thinking and feeling right now. And just kind of like be a space where we can all process together this crazy thing that's happening. I mean, one of the things that we do at ERI is we work with a lot of college pro-life clubs through our affiliate group program. And a bunch of my clubs that kind of week that the leak happened decided to host events that were just kind of open dialogue spaces for the students on their campus to come share what was happening in their heads. Like we all got this crazy news. I understand that a lot of people on our campus are probably really upset right now. We're just going to create like a listening space where people can come and share, like, what are your thoughts and feelings right now after we just heard this? Let's not yell at each other. Let's not even make arguments. Let's just sit and talk about what's going on so that we as the Pro-Life Club can hear you and your concerns, because we're not here to fight you. We're here to be on the same team. And I recognize that this was probably a really hard week for you. So come talk to us. We want to just listen and understand what's going on for you. And so if you come out in that kind of a way to the pro-choice people in your community, they're going to have a very different reaction to like what you're having to say. That's not going to be the kind of thing that leads, or at least for a good pro-choice person, to them wanting to ostracize you. That's going to lead to them being intrigued by you and respecting you, perhaps, or at least being open to, in the future, respecting you, because you aren't behaving like they expected. You're showing a lot of compassion and empathy for what they're probably feeling right now. And you're demonstrating that you want to just listen and come to understand them. You're not here to change anyone's mind. You're just here to create more effective dialogue about something that's on everyone's minds. And so if you do that, I think your likelihood of being ostracized goes down dramatically, and your likelihood of someone actually realizing that the pro-life position isn't what they thought and perhaps exploring it in a different way also goes up a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is so important, particularly when we're listening to their genuine concerns, taking them seriously. Like, I think that, you know, as pro-life people, it's very easy to sort of just, you know, get in this mindset of, well, Roe v. Wade being overturned is certainly a goal that we need to achieve. And so once we've achieved that, it's something to celebrate. But all of the problems aren't solved. And a lot of the very serious concerns and fears that pro-choice and pro-abortion people have are legitimate. Like, as a pro-life person, I am also concerned about fringe legislators trying to do things like give women who get abortions the death penalty. Like, obviously, I am extremely concerned about that and am firmly mm-hmm. against it. And I think that, you know, we know as pro-life people, well, those are fringe abolitionist legislators. And we know that, you know, the state right to life and the national right to life and all the major pro-life organizations, when a bill like that comes forward, we all roll our eyes and say, no, we're not going to support that. That's not what we're saying. We don't want to criminalize people for their pregnancy outcomes. We want to build a culture of life. But if we allow ourselves to just roll our eyes and just say, well, that's not us, that was some crazy lawmaker in Texas that doesn't have a serious constituency, the pro-choice person, regardless of if that bill is kind of has a chance of getting passed or not, the pro-choice person is just as scared whether or not that bill is going forward. And so I think that listening to their legitimate concerns like that, and, you know, like, yeah, you know, women being harmed because of self-managed abortions, and, you know, other concerns that they may have, taking them seriously and showing that you are also concerned about those. And not only are you just concerned, but you are going to stand with them regardless of if they become pro-life or not, where their position on abortion is. We're going to stand with them to oppose some of those extremist bills, like, you know, the idea of criminalizing treatment for ectopic pregnancies. Like, as pro-life people, that's not something we support, and we want to work with you, whether regardless of your stance on abortion, to ensure that our laws are actually reflective of the fact that, you know, all human beings are equal, whether they are born or unborn or pregnant or not pregnant or a woman or a man or anything. And only by taking those concerns seriously will we be able to reach pro-choice people where they are and hopefully eventually bring them over to the pro-life side.
Absolutely. I think that what you just said is so crucial. If we can demonstrate that there are many concerns that pro-choice people have that we share and that we want to stand up against, and we can help not only show them that most pro-life people don't think that, because, like, they don't necessarily know that. They're seeing something on the news that some pro-life person, you know, proposed this piece of legislation or whatever that is. And it's very easy to assume that that's representative of the whole movement. Just like I've seen plenty of pro-life people hear some fringe pro-choice person make a TikTok celebrating their abortion. And the pro-life person says, well, all women that get abortions are celebrating it. And it's like the greatest decision of their life. And they know they're killing a baby. I'm like, no. Do not make that jump. You do not get to assume that you know the thoughts and feelings of an entire group of people. Because if you claim that you do, you're lying. Like you cannot know the thoughts and feelings of an entire group of people. And so just like I tell pro-life people that they shouldn't do that about pro-choice people or women who get abortions, you also, you know, like pro-choice people, you should not do that about pro-lifers. But I also understand that it's easy to do. And so if you as a pro-life person can help them to realize that this is actually what I stand for. This is who I am. That's what humanizing something is all about, is getting to know a person behind that belief and where they're coming from on it and what their nuanced position is, so that you don't have this crazy stereotype in your head that's usually based on the fringe of a particular movement. I think that that alone makes our conversations go so much better when they get to know a real pro-life person and what that person actually thinks, not what they're seeing on the internet.
Absolutely.
I think that is a beautiful place to wrap this conversation up. Thank you so much, Emily. Thank you for coming on and talking about Equal Rights Institute and really what you guys do best, which is have conversations and make sure people are dialoguing and, as we like to say, rehumanizing each other. So, Herb, Emily, do either of you have any last things to add?
I don't, but Emily, feel free to go ahead and plug, you know, the social media, any projects, any upcoming events, anything you want to for the listeners to check out. Where can we find you?
Fantastic. Well, you can find us all sorts of places. Easiest place to kind of find all of our content at once would be our website, equalrightsinstitute.com. It's got links to all of the places. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We are constantly putting out content all of those places. So if you want answers to pro-choice questions, what do I say? We are the place to go. That would be all of our social media pages. Sign up for our email list on our website. You can also check out our upcoming speaking events. We are traveling all over the country very consistently, doing events on college campuses, in churches, at pro-life conferences, basically any place that will listen to us talk. So you can see both Josh Brom and myself on tour. There's a list of all of our upcoming speaking events. I can tell you in the month of June, I have speeches personally in both Minnesota and Michigan. And so if you happen to be in either of those places, you should check it out and see if you'd be able to come to one of our live events. But please, yes, follow us at Equal Rights Institute on basically any platform. And if you've got a topic that you want us to cover, if you've got a pro-choice question, like, yes, reach out. We do, like, monitor our DMs on these sites. Or you can email me. If you DM me on Instagram, I will reply, and maybe I can make a video answering your question. So we would love to interact with you and just help you be more prepared for these conversations.
Awesome. Thank you so much.